Hello, my name is Kevin Hrusovsky. I'm the CEO of Quanterix Corporation. I'm privileged to have Amol Chaubal here, who's our CFO. And we just did a presentation across the hallway and been meeting with investors pretty much around the clock for the last few days. So if you have any questions, we would love to field them. And we are webcasted, I'm told.
I was just wondering, you talked about neurology and oncology being two great areas of opportunity for you guys, but penetrations remain very low, you know, for neurology, less than 10%, and oncology, less than 1%. So I was just wondering what you think needs to happen for those penetration levels to sort of increase?
Yep, it's I think one of these situations where when you disrupt and you do something so differently than the way it's been done, you have to create a lot of education. And when we first started, there were a lot of people, and even some of our current competitors, that would say things like, "Well, hey, okay, we believe Quanterix has sensitivity, but there's no reason for it. So, like, what's the point?" And so we've been spending a lot of time with this foundation called Powering Precision Health, bringing a lot of the top KOLs in neurology and in oncology in to stand up and present their work and describe exactly all the ways sensitivity can be deployed to really bring a whole new approach. And I think in neurology, there has been somewhat of a breakthrough in the number of publications in the last 12 months. And PPH was standing room only over in Barcelona. And the concept of being able to have great correlations in blood for what was being done in cerebral spinal fluid, or even more importantly, what people would have liked to have done in cerebral spinal fluid, but they couldn't get samples because nobody was willing to even enter a lot of the trials. They could now see it in blood. I actually think that we're on the cusp and the inflection point of that education that's going to lead to a lot of publications that leads then to a lot more purchasing of the technology and research. And NIH, I think, is going to further fuel this with their own education, and we're spending time educating them and making sure they understand what this tool can do. So I think that we have the pathways set, and when we first moved from only being a diagnostics company 5 years ago to saying, "Why don't we get a body of evidence and research first and then go aggressively into diagnostics?" When we changed the order around, I think we needed to find a way for this sensitivity to actually work in research. And getting drugs approved was a breakthrough that has really been validated by the FDA issuing guidance in the last 12 months around using biomarkers to get approval. The concept makes so much sense, so that's the good part. If you can get to a disease when it's very early stage, like a match burning in your body versus an inferno of a forest fire, if you can get to it very early, you can see how it'd be easy for a drug to blow it out and probably blow it out at a lower dose, which makes it less toxic. So the combination of lower dosing, getting diseases, moving the biomarker versus reversing the symptom takes a little bit of time because that wasn't the traditional way for drug development to be done. So I think these CROs, you saw that there was a rapid uptake of the CROs. I think that's going to help us because they've got sales organizations that are kind of built for this to kind of educate a lot of the pharmas in ways that it's going to take us time. So I do believe that we're making the right investments. And while that all sounds bad, that our penetration's only 10%, there's a good side to that too, and that is that if we do figure this out, our execution side of the curve can create so much value so quick without any serious regulatory or reimbursement risk that will then further fuel our ability to get productively across into diagnostics. And we're hoping that companion diagnostics is a great way to bridge across without a lot of investor risk. So we'll see how the next year evolves, but we've had, you know, since going public, our growth rate has actually doubled because so many investors are actually sharing our story and trying to get their pharma stocks up in value. So I think that the things that are in place are actually good things that we aren't like 90% penetrated, because then you'd be like, oh my gosh, where do we go from here? So we actually have a market that's robust and it keeps growing. And I think we're feeling pretty good about that. Yes?
Just to build on that a little bit, do you think the insurance companies and Medicare, the payers of the diagnostic tests, are ready to sort of adopt that new paradigm of early discovery and whatnot, and sort of reimburse at the higher rate that would be necessary?
I think this is a very key point, and I noticed that one of my board members and owners is in the room here, Arch. And when I first started, and I ran Caliper, many of you know, for many years, and we did really well with that asset. When I first started at Quanterix, one of the LPs potentially of Arch was Blue Cross Blue Shield, and I remember Keith setting up a meeting to say, hey, talk. And at the time, they were invested heavily in Theranos, and they were trying to understand what Elizabeth was saying versus what I was saying, and I was like, we're going to take a few years here to get a lot of third-party peer-reviewed publications working with the scientists to validate what we've got. And they then tried to set a meeting up, and it never worked. She wouldn't talk to me. Full circle, 5 years later, we've had five PPH. We've had all of these scientists rallying, building publications, almost 650 of them now, 350 of them in neuro. I've been asked, this past year, I've been asked to keynote a lot of different forums, and next week, we have a sales meeting next week. I'm flying back for that. Then in the middle of the sales meeting, I'm flying back here, being put on a stage where Blue Cross Blue Shield is moderating, and I'm going to be on a stage with Thrive, which is the new protein liquid biopsy, just the two of us. And so there's apparently going to be a couple thousand people in the audience. And to me, the fact that Blue Cross Blue Shield, the same people that I talked to 4 years ago, is moderating it, and you can see the progress, the real progress that we've made. I mean, we didn't ever really have any revenue back. I think that that's going to be key to incenting and pushing this thing along. Because if you can look at different drug therapies and know when it's going to work and when it's not going to work, long before you've expensed all the therapy expense, or maybe before you even deploy the... I think while the pharma companies initially may not be too excited about that, payers and the FDA are. So I think that coming at this from the payer and from the regulatory bodies is a great way to bring this on. And I think neuro is kind of cool, because there you've got drugs that couldn't get approved at all, and it's easier for them to accept this concept of stratification because they've never had an Alzheimer's drug approved. And so they're desperately trying to get something. And if moving earlier and stratifying as a way to get the first shot on goal, I think we have a better chance of receptivity there. So I think we got a lot of good things lining up, and I think the payers are going to be an important piece of this.
It's interesting you mentioned Thrive. Just thinking about looking at biopsy for early detection. I mean, do you view that as competitive longer term for you guys in the oncology side?
So Tycho asked if I thought that Thrive and the competitors in liquid biopsy, are they in fact going to be competitors longer term? And it was interesting because it was actually Tycho when I first started. It says, hey, start with life science tools. Don't go too quickly into diagnostics. Make sure you...
10 years ago, people hated diagnostics.
And so we've now taken the steps of building out that body of evidence and research. And I think that what we have found... I'm meeting with Freenome right after this meeting. All the liquid biopsy companies have been meeting with me. Most of them have been molecular. And you saw a very intriguing slide I showed on how DNA is the same when you're born, and twins end up evolving and differently based on environmental factors. And epigenetics, in my mind, is actually being triggered by proteins. There's a lot of nucleotides and things that nucleotosis that is driving those DNA and those different cascades. And so the protein is central to every aspect. And if you can measure with a lot of sensitivity, I think what you're going to find is that most of those liquid biopsy companies are going to be looking for all the omics at some point with algorithms. And Freenome's been pretty advanced in that. Thrive is kind of starting with the protein, and they're now moving back into molecular. But most of the others are pretty much NGS, and they're trying now to bring in protein. I actually heard a rumor that Illumina even talked about wanting a protein position in their company. at this show, which I find really exciting because it's more phenotypic. And I do think that we can run DNA and RNA in our same device. We just wanted to stay focused on protein, but we can get exquisite sensitivity. I would even call it PCR kind of capable, digital PCR levels of sensitivity on DNA and RNA using our same device without PCR. So we have the ability to go all of those omics. And so I think we are going to look seriously at how to fuel the liquid biopsy opportunity with our ability from an engineering perspective to get at these answers, and then data-wise, getting the right algorithms. And if we do, initially, we're going to supply them. So Freenome's a big customer already. We know that, you know, we've had inquiries. Isaac Rose, now the CFO down at Thrive, and they're asking us about using our technology. So I think initially we're going to supply into it, but we're going to study it. And if we can create our own algorithms and do something really productive here, we then could be direct competitors at some point. But for the moment, I think we want to feed it with our capability and try to be a little bit more agnostic across all those players.
Kevin, just unpacking that a little bit on the nucleic acid side. So is the technology an amplification free?
It is. So the creative thing that Dr. Walt did, David Walt was the founder of Illumina. He's our founder. You know, this guy sits on my board, and he is like smart as all get out when it comes to science. And basically, what he did was he broke the sample up. He digitized 500,000 little samples is the way we've taken a lysin. We've broken it up. But there's no reason why you can't use DNA or RNA on those same beads. And what we do is we take these beads, so there's 500,000 of them. Today what we're doing is we're capturing the protein with antibodies, and then we're putting a second antibody on it with a light, and then we're isolating each one of those beads into a well that's the exact size of the bead, so one bead per well, and then we have camera technology that looks at that entire array. So we get this little 1 centimeter by 1 centimeter array that's got 250,000 wells in it. So we roll basically these beads across, they fall in. We can do the same thing with DNA and RNA, capture DNA and RNA, and then by isolating it, we can then use our camera technology. There's already publications on it. Our initial volley that we did into this industry was based on a diagnostic, fully automated platform that was only built on the front end for sample prep for protein. So all of the early on publications from our technology was all protein because you couldn't really get into the system to run DNA. We launched a little over a year ago SRX, which is only a detector. So people can use whatever sample prep they want, and that's when the publication started on DNA and RNA. They're using the same detector, the same beads, it's just that they're doing it offline. So I think that, this is a breakthrough, and there's pubs already on it, and I think seeing digital PCR level without using PCR eliminates the AT bias, gives all kind of advantages. We have some microRNA work already for the liver enzymes. There's a lot of publications, so we're already kind of starting. But I'm also saying there might be some other technologies in the molecular side that we might want to team up with as we start to build out the molecular side of our capability inside of the Simoa. So it's a pretty intriguing. We try to stay focused so we don't get, like a lot of these protein companies, they get all excited about DNA in the past, and they diverted, and they lost their focus. And so we're great at this focus. So for the moment, we're on proteins, and for the moment, we're not going after infectious disease. We're not going after a lot of other categories, which are very much reachable. We're staying oncology, neurology, protein, but we're allowing through homebrew, which is the kit that people can do whatever they want with, let them start experimenting. Those publications will guide us and inform us where we move next with this. And I think the liquid biopsy companies are probably the most advanced trying to get at the omics, the molecular side of our Simoa. Yeah, you know, it's been intriguing. 3 years ago, NFL was a homebrew. Henrik Zetterberg, one of our KOLs, MD, PhD, neurologist, from Sweden started to run it and says, oh my gosh, I can see NFL in blood, where they had a body of evidence in cerebral spinal fluid. They just couldn't see it in blood. That was a seminal publication. He's on many of the advisory boards of Lilly and Biogen and most of those companies. Next thing you know, NFL is starting to be looked at by all the pharmas based on that those seminal publications. And some of the first publications were simply correlating NFL levels and cohorts of patients in the cerebral spinal fluid with the blood. And what it showed was about 1/50th the concentration is what you find in blood. Some of that's because there's six quarts of blood versus 3 pints of CSF in your body, so just the dilution effect of having more blood. Some of it's because some of those proteins don't cross the blood-brain barrier, but interestingly, it was correlated. And different cohorts of severity, they were using patients with different levels of dementia. The more the dementia, the higher the NFL level, and at CSF, higher it was. So initially it was correlation, and then they started looking at boxers, they started looking at athletes. We won the NFL Head Health Challenge with the General Electric twice. We were on Good Morning America talking about being able to measure concussions in blood. That's how a lot of people learned about us, but we're not really focused on concussions. We think getting drugs approved for neurodegeneration is a better way to get into this. But the reality is that 30% now of our technology and our sales are linked to NFL. So we calculated that that's a couple $100 million worth of value could go away if we can't get the NFL. And we tried for 3 years to get other sources of antibodies to replicate the specificity that Uman, the company we acquired, was getting for their antibodies. And so many companies were making them, Roche, Siemens, but they couldn't get the same isotopes, and so it wasn't giving them the specificity and clinical discrimination that the Uman pair was. So we then looked at Uman and found out 50% of their revenue was us. So because of our sensitivity, we grew their revenue. We're like, we got to get this company before someone else does, and then shut down our supply, we're in trouble. So we actually got it, and then we got in there, found out everybody was buying from them because nobody can replicate what they've got. Immediately we did a deal with Siemens. So Siemens now is like, this is the antibody companies. Siemens is like one of the best in the world. They're licensing now our Uman antibody for their installed base. Techne, our supplier of antibodies, is now buying our antibody. So it was a little strategic thing just to protect NFL. But now we're seeing the offense and the ability for this thing to show neuronal health in blood. It's kind of like the cholesterol of heart. It's the way to know whether your brain is healthy or not. Are you killing neurons at a pace faster than age would predict? And these studies we're going to run are going to show us those curves. And then I think everyone in the world someday should know their NFL level. You have a kid playing soccer, you want to know what their baselines are. You want to know if you're putting them in harm's way. This is going to be the future because it's non-invasive. You wouldn't do this if it was in CSF, but now that we can see it in blood, you know, one of our key workouts is, can we become the exact sciences someday of the brain with all of these neuro panels of seeing it in blood? I don't know, but we're going to work it out, and we're going to try to create kind of good investment theses to see if we can move into this category, which no one even knew about a year ago.
And just to build on that, right, like, I mean, as Kevin walked us through, we've not only fortified our position in NFL, but we've now created offensive dimensions to it. And the NFL case is worth noting because it almost went from zero to what it is in a period of about 3 years. And what we've done through last few years is created an ecosystem of KOLs. And through our open source homebrew platform, it sort of creates a platform for us to harvest future generations of NFL-like biomarkers that come through our homebrew and KOL network, and that's the kind of dimensionality it adds to our base business.
And just to that point, Henrik Zetterberg, the same guy that did NFL, he's on the boards of Lilly, Biogen, he's consulting them all the time, feels the next NFL is p-tau 181. He thinks it's the next NFL because looking at the tau and all the different modifications in blood, so we're now building that out. So we think in the research part in the homebrew approach and our KOL outreach keeps that research business just fueling with future So yeah, it's a third now, but we hope it's going to be 10% with the advent of other NfL markers coming.
And the Powering Precision Health participating in that helped us build that for neurology. And as you saw this year, we branched out into an oncology chapter of Powering Precision Health, which we think will be pretty pivotal as we ramp our base into oncology.
Just to use the p-tau example, how do you make sure that you own the next one, right? Because, I mean, it turned out that NfL, the specificity was awesome that Amon had, but how do you make sure that you guys either develop it or own it, and then how do you protect it?
The really creative thing about what we have with the instrument that creates sensitivity with IP protection is it's allowing us to see what these antibodies represent in a way that no one else in the world can see. So we could see that NfL was so much more specific coming from Uman with our sensitivity than anyone else. So we had an advantage of doing that. And what's been remarkable is that what we really have been doing with most of our assays is taking off-the-shelf antibodies that have been used for 30 years and have whatever they've been doing for the traditional Illuminex and Techne and MSD technologies, we just take those same antibodies, and the real secret sauce is the ability to break it and digitize it and create sensitivity through the instrument. So traditionally, almost on everything, we got multiple supplies of the antibodies for almost every assay because it isn't the antibody that's bringing the greatness, it's the Simoa. We happened to find this one being one of these one in a hundred where we couldn't find anyone else to do it. And so in the future, we actually now have an antibody position for the first time. We had some learning. I brought in Dawn Mattoon, who ran all of R&D for cell signaling. She had 100 PhDs on her, Yale postdoc. She's amazing. She's like deep into the science of antibodies. So now if we find something like what we did with Uman, we'll probably acquire it or find a way to make it. But we don't really want to be an antibody company if we don't need to be. We'd rather just take and use our differentiation of Simoa. But I do think we're unique because we use homebrew, as Amal was mentioning. We let all these researchers find whatever antibodies they can, create the best assay they publish. We then watch that. If we see something that's unique and great, we're going to go get a supply of those antibodies. And if we can't get a supply, we're going to figure out, you know, what we got to do to get it. So I think we're uniquely qualified to not let that get out of our you know, hands.
Hey, Kevin, with such a high concentration with NfL, what's the risk that, you know, the enthusiasm for that marker kind of tends goes away? I mean, is it really as good as you say? And if we had all the thought leaders, they'd say, you know, there's a ton of utility with this marker, because the CNS space is, you know, it's tricky, right? You have, like, you know, the beta amyloid and tau. It's like flavor of the month. Is NfL, does it have staying power and, you know, growth?
Yeah, so this is almost the opposite of the question that was asked earlier about only being 10% penetrated. Because your point is, could this end up being too concentrated and become a problem for us? Earlier, why aren't we finding a way to get all these people that should be using the NfL aware of it? We actually do think it's the first problem. We see so much utility for this neuronal, it's neuronal health that has been around for years and years and years in the CSF. The reason we're excited and know that it's got the versatility is because we got the body of evidence in CSF. The thing that we're doing here is just simply allowing you to see it non-invasively in blood. So to me, it's got a lot of staying power, but we're not only linked to it, we're actually building multiplexes with tau, with amyloid betas, which we know are very important. We know there's a lot of drug companies focusing on those. So we're a research company, and so by being that, we know there's a lot of experimentation, and we think that the risk profile for investors of having a sit where we sit makes it easier for us not to get too concentrated with any one marker. So I think what we're going to find is that NfL could be somewhat of a leader, that if they want to get to other markers and we put it in a multiplex, they'll have to buy the other markers with the, you know what I mean? So we're going to be moving more towards plexes to get more specificity. But it's kind of like a marker that's not specific. You don't know what is causing your neuronal damage. All you know is that your neurons are dying faster than they should be. So there's a need for the next level of science of what other markers become specific for Parkinson's versus ALS versus MS versus Alzheimer's. We got a lot of other markers that we can multiplex it with. And so I think that we're feeling pretty good that there's a lot of NFLs behind it, if in fact the NFL does lose favor, but we don't have any evidence that it's going to lose favor. And by the way, Tatiana is in the audience. She's probably wanting to dive on this, but I've got a microphone, so she can't. But after the meeting, you can spend some time with her. She has spent 18 years, and she joined us from Biogen because of her total belief that this is. And I know several, like the Novartis chief medical officer, he left to go to a centralized place to help NFL get to everyone, because he sees it too. He's an MD, neurologist, doesn't want to be locked up with just one drug because he sees NFL being a complete way to look at neuronal health non-invasively. So there's a lot of evidence of these people moving. And I think there's a bigger thing. How do we get the FDA to sanction it quicker? And that's a lot of what the Tatiana's key objective is for 2020. I'd like to thank everybody for your attention and learning more about Quanterix. If there's anything we can do to help, please let us know. Thank you very much.